Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the History of Rock podcast. His name is Brandon. He's the DJ.
His name is Shim. He's the rock star. Class is in session. Regular episode today, although we're not necessarily talking about a festival or an album or anything. We're talking about Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses.
I think it's a nice way to blend. It's still
Halloween.
It's still rock and roll. It's still Rob Zombie, but because it's Halloween, it's a perfect segue. We're not feeding the algorithm. We're being true to our craft. Our craft.
So Shim had homework. He didn't do it. He didn't finish the movie.
Fuck you. I did do it enough to be able to do this podcast, but it's a fucking... Imagine if you said to a kid, like, hey, you gotta do some homework. Go and watch people eating... Oh, come on. Like, the fucking gnarly shit that I've heard is in this film. And I've watched it. I've watched half of it. And it's not my thing. It's just not my thing. It makes me uncomfortable. And luckily, we were talking about this before we started the podcast. I respect Rob Zombie more now as a filmmaker after watching this because I really paid attention to his style of filmmaking. I'm like, this is really, I get it. I get why people love his stuff. But it's just not my, you know, not my cup of tea when you start seeing people fucking cutting things up and slicing and the way it's all fucking eerie and gross.
It gets great. It's good. It gets great.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
It's homework.
But yeah, let's go.
All right. It's your job that you don't get paid for. So basically this episode's dropping here on Halloween Day. Now, last week's remix episode, we will probably discuss the scene that makes me queasy because we record these at different times. We're recording this before we're actually getting to that one. So Shim will have some time to finish the actual movie so we can talk about this scene because it's not one that I think would make a lot of other people necessarily queasy, but I remember seeing it in the theater being like, ugh, like,
right.
It made me uncomfortable, and it takes a lot in a movie to make me uncomfortable. But really quick here, when it comes to this Rob Zombie movie, I waited and waited and waited for this. I know we've talked about, I did a short on, there's an unreleased Jonathan Davis horror movie called Sin Jin Smith where he plays the devil. It had Rowdy Roddy Piper in it, and it just never got completed. Another movie that did that to me was Fanboys. Did you ever see Fanboys?
No.
So it's about this group of kids who live on the East Coast, and they know that Phantom Menace Episode 1 is going to be released. But one of the friends finds out he has cancer, and he's going to he's projected to die before the release of the movie. So they trek across country to go steal a copy from Skywalker Ranch so that he can see the movie before he dies. And that was another one where for some, like, it just, there's people
it's a
who
nice idea
like
for a film.
They didn't like the plot because, like, and this kid's got cancer. Do we really want to talk about that? Like, it seems really dark. Is there any other way we can do this? And blah, 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 blah. And it took forever for that movie to come out. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses, what we're going to get to right here.
Right. So this was Rob Zombie's directorial debut, but was supposed to happen a few years earlier. It was announced in 1997 that Zombie was going to direct the third installment of the Crow franchise with The Crow 2037, which sounds awesome.
Have you seen... I've only seen the original, The Crow.
I've only seen the original, but it sounds like
which
a nice
is
idea.
Good. It's a great movie. Yeah.
Dude, sidebar, and this isn't, we don't need to run the music. Best villain death ever in a movie. To have the thing of like, okay, you're a real piece of shit. You're a really good villain. I want you to die well. And he just says, all right, I'm going to give you the deepest agony all in one moment and then off the fucking roof. Like, that's what you deserve. That's what they should do for people going to jail for murder. Be like, all right, let's just make you feel everything and then fuck off.
So Zombie's version never got past the script phase, although we do know how the movie was going to play out. So it was going to start in the year 2010.
Which was futuristic at the time.
It's tough to think about that. It was going to be in the year 2010 when a mother and her son are murdered by a satanic priest on Halloween night. Mm. 1 year later, the boy would be resurrected as the Crow. The timeline would then jump 26 years, whatever, to 2037. The Crow, who is unaware of his past, is now a bounty hunter and ends up colliding with his all-powerful killer and, you know, ultimately colliding with that satanic priest that had originally killed him. I mean, sounds like a good movie. It just never happened, unfortunately.
Since the movie didn't happen, it means that we got House of a Thousand Corpses, which I got to admit is a really good name for a horror film. As Zombie's first movie, and even this movie was delayed. The movie began while Zombie was on the Universal property pitching a Halloween Horror Nights haunted house based on his music videos.
While you were living in LA, did you ever go to Halloween Horror Nights?
No.
Would you ever go to Halloween Horror Nights?
I would if someone invited me that was awesome, or if there was like a hot chick that was like, oh, I want to take you out to this thing, like if I was single.
I will invite
you. But other than that, no.
How about that? I will invite you.
I'll go with you. Ah. Since we can't do Rage Against the Machine.
Oh,
it's Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, that's coming up in the encore, baby. My God. Put a pin in that sumbitch.
Yeah.
Halloween Horror Nights is awesome. And you not being a horror movie fan, I was always kind of curious if you would do something like that. Because
I wouldn't do it for the sake of doing it. I would do it for the sake. If you invited me, I would go, but I would never be like, yo, we've got to go do this thing. I'd be like, let's just get high and watch fucking Friends.
I'll be that guy. We'll make a road trip. We're next year.
I can dig it.
I think my wife and I had talked about wanting to do like a Florida trip next year in October, and that would include Orlando and most likely Halloween Horror Nights. The only reason we did Universal Studios this past trip, I know. Okay, sidebar here, really quick. No, 60-second timer.
You want to run the music?
No, because we didn't do Halloween Horror Nights because my kid's too young. Essentially, is what.
Okay, right.
So since he ended up pitching House of a Thousand Corpses,
as well as the Halloween Nights thing,
he kind of made it up on the spot. Like he had already done, they'd already discussed the whole haunted house thing. But Zombie said, quote, I was in the office of the head of production or something, and he asked me if I had any movie ideas, and I pitched him Corpses, which was very rough at the time because I wasn't ready, and I made it up on the spot. He liked it. I went home, wrote a 12-page treatment, and met up with them. 2 months later, we were shooting.
Wouldn't it be amazing if you could just live in that life where you're like, I've got an idea for a movie, you know the right guy, and then you're just making a movie? Like, I have so many movie ideas that if I knew the right person and had that type of credit, I'd be like, I would do exactly what he's doing.
I still think one of the funnier parts is that he admits he really just had the title.
Right.
He's like, I knew the title. Like you just said, House of a Thousand Corpses is a great title.
It's a great title. Yeah.
And that's kind of, he had that, and then he just kind of winged it on the fly.
Well, the funny thing is that House of a Thousand Corpses, it doesn't sound too hard to write. Horror movies are pretty simple. Person or a group of kids find themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time and get fucked up. And then 90 minutes later, who was the killer? That guy or that girl. So House of a Thousand Corpses, you're like, well, it turns out that story takes place in a house where there's lots of corpses. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
I could totally see it. And I could totally see why when you put the idea of Rob Zombie, that title and guy gets things done, you'd be like, yeah, sure, make a movie. As long as you got an idea. Yeah.
That was very
production for the movie. Production for the movie began in May of 2000 and finished up on Halloween of 2000. His haunted house was launched the following year called American Nightmare, which did feature some elements from the movie. But this is where the trouble began for House of a Thousand Corpses.
They had even done a trailer that debuted at Halloween Horror Nights for House of a Thousand Corpses. Now, the budget wasn't really known. When you look it up, you can see anything from there was a budget of $3 million all the way up to $14 million for House of a Thousand Corpses. But Zombie knew he didn't have the funding for a great ending. So he gambled that the studio would give him more money if he shot what he could with the remaining budget. And he said, quote, I knew the ending sucked, so I let it suck. And they said, the movie's great, but the ending sucks. And I know. So they gave me more money, and we shot a more elaborate ending, bigger sets, the whole razzmatazz. So that's what you get to look forward to here when you finish up House of a Thousand Corpses.
And the original cut of the movie focused more on the teenagers on their road trip and also featured a skunk ape. What the fuck is a skunk ape?
It's a Bigfoot.
But then why didn't they say Bigfoot? I'm thinking of a skunk. I'm thinking of a bear with a long tail and black. I'm thinking of Pepe
Black
Le Pew
with, like,
as
white
a big
stripes
fat.
Down the back.
Like Pepe Le Pew, if he was really old and bitter that woman just left and never came back, and he's just sitting there with the beer and the cigarettes being like, that fucking bitch, she never come back to me, motherfucker. That's what I see when I think of a skunk ape. Something that is briefly mentioned in the final cut of the movie, but it doesn't seem to fit into the rest of the movie. Well, I wonder why.
I don't know if that scene came up or not with where you are at, because it's,
I didn't see
because you know how he puts in these really weird cuts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's in one of those where you have this guy where he's like, that damn skunk ape slept with my wife, And it's just, it comes off as these like two people who read the National Enquirer and they're talking about this skunk ape basically raping his wife, or his wife just having relations with a skunk ape. And it, I mean, there's a lot of those scenes where they don't seem to fit, but this one really didn't seem to fit.
Right. Universal wanted the movie to focus more on the kids, but Zombie Dude, no one gives a shit about the kids. And that's a very good point. I got to admit that. Like, you don't
stop and think about who he got to play the roles. You've got Rainn Wilson, who ended up playing Dwight Schrute.
Yeah, this was right before The Office, right?
Well, this would have been a few years because, again, the movie didn't release until 2003, but it was filmed in the year 2000. A lot of people probably knew Chris Hardwick because, I mean, he was pretty big from MTV. This was long before The Nerdist. So it was well before any of that stuff, but they knew him from Singled Out on MTV. Mm-hmm. That was the big game show that he was on. That's where I recognized him from. I didn't recognize...
One of the girls went on to do quite well, right?
I think so. And some of the actors in this became like truly, like Sid Haig became iconic for playing Captain Spaulding. So it was kind of a big deal with some of these guys being in this movie. Now, there was a lot of dark humor in the film, and that wasn't originally intended. Zombie said of the movie, I'm getting all the zombie quotes here, quote, that the movie turned out to be a little wackier and campier than I originally intended. But as we were shooting, that's the tone that it was turning out to be. Movies sometimes dictate their own course, so I just sort of went with it.
I think it was a good idea. I like the fact that it's really quirky and bent. Like, that's what sets it apart.
Yeah. I mean,
I like that.
It's truly gained a cult following.
Yeah.
But at the time, people fucking hated it. And we'll get to the reviews at the end of the episode.
Because it's a gross fucking movie. It makes you uncomfortable. It's designed to do that. It's really artistic. The thing that I like about it is the artistic artistry, so to speak. We've talked about this before. The reason that I don't like Alice in Chains is not because the band is not good. It's because I don't like how it makes me feel, but they are amazing at what they do. Rob Zombie is amazing at what he does. He makes me feel exactly what he's trying to make me feel. I just don't like it. I'm like, hey, Rob, hard pass. See you after the movie. Let's get a beer.
Shim
the
hates house, both Rob Zombie and Alice
no,
in Chains.
No, fuck off. You motherfucker. No, don't. I'm going to talk over it. I'm going to talk over it because someone's going to clip it. Someone will clip this shit and send it to the wrong person. It'll be like, hey, Shim, do you want to open for Rob Zombie again? I'll be like, yeah, too bad. He saw that clip of you saying he sucks dick. No, so shut the fuck up, Brandon, because you don't know what you're doing in my career that doesn't exist anymore, okay?
Well, it's really funny that you bring that up, too, because there's a weird comment that Zombie makes that kind of affects the release of the movie, which ties into exactly what we're doing right there. Yeah.
All right. So the house used in the movie is the same house used in The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. One downside of this was that the Universal Backlot Tour would cause issues during the filming and ruin takes.
And we just did the Universal Backlot Tour back when we were in California, my family and I. And they had some of the stuff that was just completely shut down. The goddamn Jaws ride was completely empty. It was they were doing their annual maintenance, and they warned us. They're like, you're going to get to see something not a lot of people do because we only do this once a year. And there was no water in it, and you just see a mechanical shark sitting in the middle of this field. Oh, my God. So Rob Zombie, he tried to be clear with Universal that the movie he was making, it was not going to be for mass audiences. He said, again, quote, I get all the quotes here. I was really blatant when I talked to them. I didn't want to get into a situation where they thought I was making something mainstream. And I told them that I wanted to make a drive-in movie, something very gritty and nasty and weird. He succeeded.
He definitely achieved that.
Yeah.
It definitely has that vibe. The film's plot was heavily influenced by Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Hills Have Eyes. You can totally see that too.
Exactly. And Universal ended up not releasing the film out of fear that it was going to get an NC-17 rating. And then after it was shelved for a few months, Zombie ended up just buying the rights from Universal, and then he went to go shop it for different distributors.
Good, which I think is fair enough. A deal was eventually struck with MGM and had a release date of October 2002 planned, but this ended up not happening because of a comment made by Zombie about MGM. There are two different versions of this story.
So Zombie's version, going back to what we were talking about, how you hate Rob Zombie and you're afraid somebody will clip that, His version of the story is he. So think about how weird this would have been back in the early 2000s. He was interviewing Ben Affleck for an MTV Movie House segment. Zombie had mentioned that Universal wouldn't release House of a Thousand Corpses because they found the content morally objectionable. Then Affleck mentioned MGM, and Zombie replied with, apparently they have no morals over there. They're happy for some blood. So that's what Zombie thinks happened, is that he made this comment about them not having any morals, and they were like, ah, right, we can't have this, and they pulled the plug. Is essentially kind of what
he's a fucking about. This is the thing I find hilarious about rock stars. He's a rock star. He's supposed to say shit like that.
Well, that's his version of the story. So then,
MGM's version of the story is an unnamed spokesperson said it was falsely announced in Variety that we had the project. We never had a deal with Rob Zombie. We were in negotiations, let's put it that way, or we were thinking about it. So their version is, we were never on the hook for releasing this fucking thing anyway. Never officially on the hook for it.
Oh, okay? Man, and I remember talking about all of this stuff, because this is in the year 2002, and I'm in radio broadcasting school. You're constantly searching for content. You're constantly searching for things to talk about. So anytime I would see something pop up about a House of a Thousand Corpses, I'd get excited until it'd be like, oh, Universal's not releasing it. Or then it was like, oh, and then they signed with MGM. And then you get super excited. MGM, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, MGM's not going to release it. And it's like, Jesus, this roller coaster. My God, just release the goddamn movie. So at this point, Zombie, he's ready to release the movie on his own. Right. He's not going to look for a distributor. He doesn't need the help of a studio. He's just going to release the movie. But eventually he signs with Lionsgate Entertainment, and they released an R-rated cut-down version of the movie. Now, a lot of the stuff that was cut out had to do with his wife's character, Sherry Moon Zombie, her character, Baby. There was a lot of stuff, and this will happen, so obviously there's kind of the main linear storyline that happens throughout the movie, but then there's all these cut scenes that happen kind of, you know, bounce back and forth from these different, hence like the skunk ape scene where the guy's talking about the skunk ape. That's one of those. One of those. And then there's stuff where you see Sherry Moon's, her character Baby, playing with like a skeleton. And she's like, the thing that really kind of did it in was that she's essentially like masturbating with the skeleton. And that was some of the stuff that was putting it up over the edge. And so they cut a lot of that stuff out, and then they were able to get an R rating.
Does he have a director's cut? I'm assuming there's a director's cut now, right? If it's a cult version. Because, no, but seriously.
Well, it's just why. He's always got the director's cut.
I can imagine that fans of the movie would be like, okay, we've heard that story now. We've got to see this fucked up version. And the hardcore fans are going to want to see it. The first public screening of the film, by the way, sidebar, you should definitely clip that story and finish with me just asking, is there a director's cut? And then just stop and be like, that's what he wants to see, that shit. The first public screening of the film happened in Argentina on March 13th, 2003, eventually getting its full theatrical release on April 11th, 2003. It opened up at the box office behind Adam Sandler's Anger Management. Meaning that it was like number one movie was that, and then his was number two box office sales?
Opening weekend, I believe, it was House of a Thousand Corpses.
Interesting. Okay. I'm surprised it did that well, considering how fucked up it is. I thought it would be cult from the beginning. Seriously.
Well, but then remember, I mean, this was 3 years in the making. Like, there's people like me.
Fans. Yeah.
There's people like me who are just waiting for this thing to come out. So, did you want to talk a little bit more about how you hate Rob Zombie?
Fuck you. Just go.
No, you did not want to. No. So I'm bouncing back to in 2002. Sort of some of the other movies that came out. Spider-Man was the big one. Star Wars Episode II came out that year.
There was a lot of movies to compete with.
Secrets that came out that year. Yeah. Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers came out that year.
Yeah, like that's a lot to compete with for a slasher film like this that's really off the wall, you know. But it does go to show you, Rob Zombie has, and this is the thing that I was going to say before, I don't like Rob Zombie's music. I love Rob Zombie as a person, as an artist. I don't give a shit. As a person, as an artist, I don't like his music. It's not for me. I totally understand why other people would like it. I love White Zombie. I love More Human Than Human. But when I've listened to his solo stuff, it's not for me. But I love his artistry and his commitment. And when I went to, we played a few shows with, well, we played a few festivals where they headlined. And I remember seeing him dressed up in the whole nines, dressed up in all the, and I'm like, damn, your shit is tailor-made. You've got like the talcum powder on you and you're all made up and everything like that. And then I watch the show and I'd be like, yeah, I get this. Like, I, even though I don't know the songs and I don't like the music, I'm like, I love the concept of the show. And he was so nice, just for the hand, the moment, the few sentences that we said back and forth, which is like, hey man, how you doing? Looking forward to seeing the show. And like, he was so nice and quiet and soft-spoken. And I was like, yeah, I totally get, like, you've got your facade, you've got your show, you've got your thing that you do, but you're a quiet, introverted, artistic kind of guy. So I totally love him as an artist, but I love the fact that I don't like half of his art. I love it.
So I looked it up specifically here for opening weekend. It actually came in fourth.
Right.
And at least this is according to Box Office Mojo through IMDb, where Anger Management came in at number one. Phone Booth was number two. What a Girl Wants was number three. And then House of a Thousand Corpses came in at number four, just barely.
What good company.
Bringing down the house.
Good company to keep. Very good company to keep.
But eventually, but Lionsgate, they made their investment on the first day of the release, and they quickly approached Zombie about making a sequel. Which led to The Devil's Rejects, Firefly. Which a lot of people, Devil's Rejects comes off more, I mean, it still can be a bit gory, but it comes off more as an action flick than a horror flick.
Right.
And I've never seen Three from Hell.
Okay.
There's been a few of his movies I've tried to watch, and I probably wasn't in the right mindset and never got through them, like Salem's Lot, right. Stuff like that. I was never able to get through any of that stuff, but... you can now get to the reviews of what people thought of the actual movie.
This is the thing that I'm interested in. The reviews were generally negative. Frank Schecker, The Hollywood Reporter, wrote that the film lives up to the spirit but not the quality of its inspirations. What a great way to put it. And is ultimately a cheesy and ultra-gory exploitation horror flick and strangely devoid of thrills, shocks, or horror. That would have sent people running to see the film. For him to say it's cheesy and ultra gory exploitation horror flick, it'd be like, yeah, people who love that shit are going to flock to see it. Thanks for the help, mate.
Yep, they're signing up for it. By the way, I said Salem's a lot with Rob Zombie. Lords of Salem was actually the movie that I was trying to reference there. So Clint Morris of Film Threat slammed the film as an hour and a half of undecipherable plot and found the film to be sickening overall.
Fantastic. And there's none of these so far. Rob Zombie's loving all these, by the way. James Brundage of filmcritic.com wrote that the film was simply hick after hick, cheap scary image after cheap scary image, lots of southern accents and psychotic murders, and was too highbrow to be a good cheap horror movie, too lowbrow to be satire, and too boring to bear the value of the ticket. What a great review. What a great way to put it.
Now, there was a positive review, and there was more than a few, but this one comes from JoeBlow.com. They claim that it slaps together just the right amount of creepy atmosphere, nervous laughter, cheap scares, fun rides, and blood and guts to satisfy any major fan of the macabre.
And I think that's pretty fair. And then that
opening scene, the one that you've seen where it's with Captain Spaulding at that gas station, the one where the robbers come in, that is a brilliantly put together scene. That whole thing, from the sound to the music to the angle of the shots to just the way that that whole thing was done was great. And with Sid Haig playing Captain Spaulding, he goes, and fuck your mama, boom, and he fucking shoots the guy. Oh, it's so good. So good.
Yeah, no, that really sets the tone for the movie quite, like, you know what you're getting into after that opening scene. And if you don't like it, then you better go get your money back straight away.
Get out now.
So, yes, House of a Thousand Corpses would be the beginning of the Firefly film series, followed up by 2005's The Devil's Rejects and 2019's Three from Hell. Really? There was that long between movies?
Yeah. Shit. I mean, because remember, in between that, he also had the two Halloween movies that he made as well, which, again, the second one I'm a little iffy on, but the first one I really enjoyed, Rob Zombie's Halloween. I thought it was a good movie. But if you get a chance here, if you're listening to this on Halloween Day, hopefully you are, and you can go check out House of a Thousand Corpses if you have some time, if you've never watched it. Because I don't know about you, but once like Halloween season ends, my brain flips, and you don't really watch horror movies anyway, but maybe we could think of, like, I mean, Christmas is different because you can't watch a Christmas movie in June, right?
No, you have to. For me, as soon as November rolls around, like October, it's Christmas is already coming in October, but November 1st, you get smashed in the face with fucking Christmas for 2 months, and I prepare myself emotionally for the amount of Mariah Carey and Michael Bublé that I have to fucking endure for 2 fucking months just for this. So I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not dealing with Christmas at any other time of the year. I'm like, I prepare myself to deal with it for those 2 months. I'm not doing anything in fucking
when
June.
It's 95 degrees down under.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, Christmas in Australia is amazing, by the way. You should get your ass down here one time. You'd love it.
All right, so that's two trips we got to book. One is to spend Christmas down in Australia, and the other one is to spend Halloween Horror Nights up here so Shim can experience it. But on that note, we're going to get to an encore here in just a bit. But his name's Shim. He's the rock star.
His name is Brandon. He's the DJ. Class is dismissed. Tight, tight.
It's toit like a duck's arse.
Fucking. So what were you going to say? Oh, we got to complain about Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, God. I got a whole note full of things.
Okay,
for the
go ahead. Get started.
First and foremost, we'll get the Rage Against the Machine stuff out of the way. So for anybody who doesn't know, God damn it. Rage Against the Machine.
For anyone that doesn't know, God damn it.
One band that Shim and I have never seen, and apparently we're just not destined to see them. Shim could have flown to Australia to see them. Was it at Big Day Out?
Big Day Out 2009,
And he didn't, and he's still kicking himself. Now he's
and I chose not to. It's not that I couldn't. I could have spent the money, and it would have been a big expense. I chose not to because I thought they'll do a run in America when I'm here, and then they fucking didn't.
Yeah,
and I regret it. Yeah.
And for me, I was going to check out Rage Against the Machine with the Wu-Tang Clan back in 97, 98, I think it was. And ultimately, Wu-Tang pulled out of the tour and I did not get tickets to that. I think Rage Against the Machine still went through, but not both Rage Against the Machine and Wu-Tang Clan. So it's been ever elusive. Go back and listen to the Rockstar 101 episode where, you know, you can find it on Spotify, Apple, or Google. And I got the goddamn tickets and they were crazy fucking expensive. And then they just canceled. Yeah. Well, no, I take it back because before that we had COVID hit. So they pushed it back. The concert was supposed to happen April of 2020. And then it got pushed back. Yeah. And then it got pushed back. And then it got pushed
I was back. Getting ready. Yeah. I was getting ready to fly over literally that week.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm planning to. Yeah.
I was like, hey, man, you might want to like look into this because things are starting to shut down over here.
Yeah.
So.
And I was still going to come. And I'm so lucky that I didn't because I would have been stuck in America. I would have been stuck for a long fucking time.
He would have been stuck over here.
But yeah. And the thing is that I can't really, we can't blame them. Like I texted Tom the day that we found out just to say, dude, I'm sorry. That sucks. That's got to suck. You're in one of these biggest bands of all time. You're finally back together. The band's doing well. You got some shows. You're going to make heaps of money. And you're planning on that money and like and also you're planning on, you know, revisiting your music and having a good time. And the rug just gets pulled out for everyone. And there's nothing you can do about it. Zach fucked his leg up.
Yeah.
He didn't do
and
it on purpose. Just
he's
a fucking
got a heel. And he tried. Yeah. They tried to power through it. They tried to continue doing the shows. Yeah. And unfortunately, they weren't able to get through it, unfortunately. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that everything works out for Rage Against the Machine. Zach gets better. And then they end up. Because, I mean, I think the real gut punch to this one is we had been through postponements before. This is a cancellation. Like they're giving us our money back.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. God, so I got to go sit online and order the goddamn tickets again. So, but anyway,
well, you never know. Maybe we'll get better seats this time.
Well, maybe it's life. It's life postponing it and life being like, look, we're going to help you build this podcast up a little bit and you'll be able to go sit down with the band.
Or I'll rebuild my career and go and open for them one time.
Hey!
Maybe next time.
Let's go and down. What?
That'd be fun. Yeah, that would be fun.
You keep holding on to your white balloons, buddy.
Yeah, right.
Like, there's people who listen to this who are familiar with Sick Puppies, but they might not catch all of the references that I make.
That's because that's a deep reference.
It is. It's a great song, though. White Balloons is a fantastic goddamn song. But anyway, that was the Rage Against the Machine stuff. The other stuff I want to talk about. So this episode's not dropping until Halloween Day. And middle of this month, my family and I, we were in Disney. If you follow me on social media, which you should be doing anyway, at The Real Brandalorian, hit up Shim. He's got a whole mishmash of names. It's at Shim on Instagram.
Good luck remembering
them. It is at Shim on More on YouTube, and it's at Shim More on TikTok. But I'm at The Real Brandalorian on all of them because I know how to manage my social media. I'm fucking with you. So
I'm actually thinking I'm probably going to change my YouTube name because of the shit that you give me. I think I've researched how you can change. I need to change my YouTube name to Shim Music so that it's just more across the board.
Well, I was able to change mine. The one that I had that was the outlier was TikTok because it had to be Goat the Brandalorian, but you can it's your official. It's still technically Goat the Brandalorian, but I was able to change my username to The Real Brandalorian. So if you search The Real Brandalorian, I come up in that search, and that's really all I needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we were in Disney and I don't have a ton of money right now because technically all the stuff that I'm doing, I'm not getting paid for. I've heard about a couple of jobs, but I was really stressing sort of this trip and you know, how am I going to afford it? Because not only am I not working right now, but my wife is starting her own business. So she, like, her money isn't necessarily, you know, pouring in. So I told myself, because before when I would do a Disney trip, I liked buying the shit. I liked buying all of the trinkets and toys and all that, you know, that other stuff. And this time I was like, I'm only going to buy something if it really stands out to me, if I really like it, if it's something that I want. It was kind of underwhelming, the stuff that they had on this trip.
Okay.
But I did buy one thing.
Right.
Are you ready for this?
Well, what'd you get? Hold on. Yeah.
Hold on. Sing some music while I do this.
Holding on, waiting for Brandon. He's going to bring up what he bought. He's going to show up what I knew it was going to be, a Baby Yoda. I wanted to say it and be like, I bet it's a Baby Yoda thing. Yeah. Awesome.
So there's a magnet that you put on the inside of your shirt.
Okay.
And then he clips on the magnet and
I
bought
this. And he stays.
And he's right there. And I got this so that, like, when you see me live stream video games, I've got Grogu right there. He's going to be chilling.
That's fantastic.
What's up, buddy? Like, my kid bought one that was like a little baby bird. My wife ended up wearing it most of the time, though, which was hilarious because my kid wanted to take her backpack in. But you saw the pictures of me and the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. I saw those.
Oh, my God.
You have fun? God. You look like you were having fun, eh?
I was a kid again, dude. And I give Disney props. So I say it was underwhelming because, like, the fireworks shows or Fantasmic, which is the one big show they do, like, in the Rivers of America at night, a lot of that stuff wasn't happening. And you could definitely tell they're still sort of feeling the effects of COVID. There seemed to be a lot of training going on, which I think means they probably just had a mass hiring of people. So, like, when you're on a ride, there's one person who is kind of guiding another person running the rides and stuff like that. But it felt like a lot of the rides were going down frequently. So we got into, they do a special thing during the Halloween season called Oogie Boogie Bash over at California Adventure. And if you don't have a ticket for that, you don't get in. So it was sold out online. And we were like, shit, we missed it by like a week.
Okay.
So we didn't get in. But when we showed up to the park, I went and asked a lady at one of the ticket booths. And she's like, you know what? Let me go ask. So she goes back and she comes out and she's like, those two ladies, those are my supervisors right there. And they're going to make an exception for you tonight. So if you guys want to go to Oogie Boogie, the next open booth, they'll take care of you.
Wow.
And, you
can purchase tickets.
And I was like, fuck yeah. And it was really cool. And I got a lot of good footage from that. I'm going to be posting all this stuff up on Instagram if it's not already up on Instagram. And the one thing that sucked, I was really looking forward to the parade. Canceled.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
It was the first, dude, and it's the first time I ever went live on TikTok. I've never gone live on TikTok. So I'm sitting there, I'm having a beer. My buddy Alan was sitting there, and he's chatting with me and asking questions, and I'm kind of interacting with everybody, and we're shooting the shit. And they did this really cool thing where they have somebody dressed up as Ichabod, and he's kind of going through. And then you have the Headless Horseman comes through. And then out of nowhere you hear, due to unforeseen circumstances, parade is canceled. And it's like, fuck. And it was the second one. So they do two a night. We should have gone to the first one. We would have seen it. But it was still, all in all, it was still a really good trip.
That's great, man.
It's the first time I'd seen Galaxy's Edge, which is the Star Wars land, and fuck. Being able, so first of all, Rise of the Resistance, that ride is worth the extra money. So you can purchase like what they call the Lightning Lane Pass now. And yeah. It runs upwards of $25 per person. So for myself, my right. wife, and my kid, it was running a $75 extra dollars just to get in the Lightning Lane for that ride. Fucking worth it, dude. It is. Okay. Oh, it's so good. It's so well put together. It's all. It's almost like five rides in one. I mean, it's a lengthy yeah. ride. It's really good. So if anybody, if you're ever planning a trip to Disneyland or World, do that. It's worth the money. There's a cantina called Oga's Cantina, which looks just like Mos Eisley from A New Hope. You know where they go in with the. We got in there. That was.
You get to go
shit.
In there. Oh, yeah. You know what? Yeah, I have a couple of friends that went and did that, and I remember it's coming back to me now that all that stuff is there. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was dope. And then
so you were stoked.
The second time we rode the Millennium Falcon ride, which is called Smuggler's Run, there's six seats. So the front seats are the pilots, the middle seats are the gunners, and then the back seats are the engineers. So for the pilots, the person on the left, they control the ship going left and right. The person on the right controls the ship going up and down. So I'm on the right, my daughter's on the left, and I could not be more happier that I was sitting in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon flying that goddamn thing. And I'm at my helmet. I'm like, left and right, Adriana, left and right. She's like, I'm trying, Dad. And then I'm like a fucking Wookiee. And she's like, I'm trying. We're flying all over the goddamn place. And then, there's a spot. Cause I mean, it's the actual fucking console. Like it's what it looks like. And they were like, when did it make the jump to light speed? And I'm like, yeah. And I pulled the lever because, you know, they pull the lever to go into light speed. And I was like, that was so awful. Yeah. So my wife has that footage. If I haven't put it up already, by the time this episode releases, it should be up. And
they actually film you doing it so you can have a copy of it?
No, my wife did.
Oh, she's sitting there. Okay, cool.
So it's my daughter and I in the front. And then my wife is sitting right behind my daughter. And so when you're a gunner, you basically just have one button and you just kind of mash it. And that's really all you're targeting. That's really all you're doing. And if there's more to it, I don't know, because I was too enthralled with everything that was going on. So she's just holding her phone,
you can tell.
Smashing the button while I'm getting super excited. And it was so goddamn good. It was so good.
That's cool, man. That's cool.
And that's what and then I forgot one more thing. Since we were talking about the leg pinching thing, I had a nasty bout of that like anxiety hit, and it usually hits theme parks because like the one thing I can't have, and this makes it difficult to ride roller coasters, if I'm like
is fun.
No, if I'm like pressed in and I can't move, it's like that's like being stuck in that MRI tube again, and I freak the fuck out. Like I can't have it.
Right.
So whenever I have a ride, I always try to leave a little extra space. I know that they don't like that because they want you in there real fucking tight. But motherfucker, I'll hold on for dear life, you know, rather than having this thing clamp down on me. And there was one part on the Cars ride where you had a seatbelt that comes down like this. And if it pins me back, so I would leave extra space. And they were like, sir, you need to have that all the way against you. So I would lean forward into it rather than have it pull me back.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, you're fine. And I was like, Jesus Christ. So I was already kind of in that mental mode. I'd been battling a bunch of other like just really stressful things. And we had free breakfast at the hotel. And my wife and daughter would usually go up and eat first because I eat like a fucking speed demon. Like I can shovel food and I'm good to go. I would keep getting everything ready while they went up and started to actually enjoy their breakfast. So I'm sitting down there and I'm going through the bag and I'm like, I got to make sure I got this. I got to make sure I got this. I got this. I got this. I got this. And then I get to the hotel room door and I'm like, okay. And I lock it and I pull it down. I push, push. And then I pull up and I push, push. And lock, 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 tap, tap, lock, lock. Like doing the whole fucking thing. And I walk down the hallway and I get 100 feet away and I'm like, fuck. I turn back around and I go check the fucking door and it's fucking, I go in and I double check everything and I open up the fucking bag. It takes me like 15 extra minutes. I'm going through fucking everything. I am double checking the backpack.
Why?
Double checking my pockets. Just my brain. It's just it, for some reason, that anxiety hit and I don't know what it was, but it fucking hit hard. And so
The only way to relieve the anxiety is to check everything again and go, no, we're good.
And that doesn't even necessarily help, because it got to the point. So I get to the door and I go in, I make sure that the safe is locked, everything's in there. I put the code into the safe. I double check. I pull everything out of the safe. I'm looking into the safe. I'm going through fucking, like, this is like bad moment.
Right.
So I
right.
get to the front door and I lock it and I push lock, like tap it, do the whole fucking thing. And I sit there and I just pinch the fuck out of my leg. And I'm like, it's there. I go, it's fucking done, Brandon. Fucking walk away. So I do. I get to the same spot that I was before. And I'm like, is that part of my leg hurt because my pants are rubbing wrong? Fuck, I went back.
Are you fucking kidding?
I'm not joking. I went back and did the same fucking thing again. And went through. And now, granted, I didn't open the safe and go through the whole rigmarole. But
I'm getting anxious just hearing the story.
Yeah. And so then I'm like, you got to fucking do this, man. Like, you have to fucking, like, you got to relax. Like, I'm trying to do my breathing and I'm trying to do all these different things. Yeah. And I'm genuinely
getting tense while you're fucking telling me. Okay,
so I do the whole fucking this thing again and I grab my fucking leg and I just pinch the fuck out of the other leg. And out loud, like, if anybody was in the hallway, they would have heard me. And I, like, as I'm pinching my leg, I say, Brandon, it's closed. You're fine. Walk away. And I did. And I was okay for the rest of the day. And then I got home, or I got back to the hotel to shower, and I have fucking bruises, like, all over my hips from the times I'm pinching my fucking leg.
Really?
Makes you feel weird.
I love you. I wish I could help you, but I honestly don't know what the fuck to do.
No, that's it. Look, there's nothing anybody can do. Like, I'm working on it. There's certain things that I do. I understand it's really fucked up. I understand it can, like, I appreciate you listening.
And
anybody who's still tuned in, I appreciate listening too. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a weird thing because, like, you're not hurting anyone else. And if it didn't include, like, bodily harm, it'd be a really cute story. It'd be like, well, I've got to like tie my hair in a little rubber band, and then when I feel it flicking, it reminds me, like, that's cute. No, I have to cut and bleed and bruise. Like, that's where it's like, it's not funny anymore. It's more like, it's kind of funny, but now I just feel negativity in my chest.
Yeah,
the general sense of, like, negative energy. And so, yeah, well, you know, like, I'm going to do a little, I'm trying to think of who it is, but, like, the guy from Moneyball, good luck with that.
But no, I figured I had to share that because we've talked about that, on the podcast before. And look, I know, like, I don't tell the story. So anybody's like, oh my God, that sucks. I feel so bad. Like, no, like, dude, it's a part of, it's shit that I deal
with. It's a quirk.
Everybody else deals with their own shit. I'm dealing with it. Now, granted, if anybody has any advice, if there's anything that they've done where they've noticed anything like this, or more importantly, what I'm hoping to get out of any kind of story like this is if somebody goes through the same thing, they can hear, I'm not alone. Like, I'm not going to solve your issue. Right. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not any sort of mental health professional. But if my story can help ease somebody else, or apparently, like, stress shim out on the flip side, like, that's not the intent.
Hey, it's worth it. Anything for a friend.
Thanks, buddy, from fucking halfway across the globe.
Yeah. Hey, whatever
sparking
helps.
Anxieties. So anyway, so that was kind of what I had for the encore.
So the only thing that I had that I thought was really interesting came up yesterday. No, it came up. Yeah, it came up yesterday. So I was driving back from meeting up with a friend, and I saw these posters on the telegraph poles advertising a band that I used to love that I thought had broken up. Band called Regurgitator. Say what?
Regurgitator.
yeah. And here's the funny thing. They were a 90s alt rock band, but their songwriting and their production, like, it's just a three-piece, mostly two guys. And they're kind of nerdy, but they released song after song after song that were just amazing songs. But they were always go and check out Regurgitator, everyone. If you haven't, if you think it's going to be punk rocky, they started out as a grunge band. Then they moved into electronica. Then it turned into nu metal. Then it turned into, like, hyper pop, like ABBA melody. Like, they would do everything. And they were amazing live. And their songs were always solid. And I was like, damn. And I remember seeing them live being like, fuck, these guys kick ass live. And
just as a heads up, if you're Googling Regurgitator, just be careful because videos of the human Regurgitator will pop up.
Yeah, no, put in Band Music Australia.
Yeah,
it'll pop, and you'll see a band. Point is, here's the thing. I saw that they had a show. So I checked it out. I Googled it. And they're playing this Saturday. By the time this airs, it'll have already passed, right? But they're playing this Saturday. I went, oh, shit. And I went to get to look at tickets, sold out. And I'm like, damn, I would have really, like, there are four other bands that I grew up listening to. They're all playing a nostalgia show. And I'm like, this is great. I'm going to go out Saturday night, take the wife, we'll do the whole thing. Sold out. If I was in America, one guess what I'd do? Make a phone call, right? Call someone and be like, hey, man, are you connected? Connect me with someone who knows a manager or whatever. I need tickets. No problem. But it's Australia. All Australian bands, all Australian promoters. And I racked my brain for an hour being like, who the fuck do I still know in this country that I can make that phone call to? And it's not because I've burned bridges. I've just been gone so long that I'm like, anyone who I know, they own like a concrete company, or they're like, they have a new profession, or they're a computer technical analysis with three kids. They're like, it's been 15 years. Everyone's moved on. Like, if you didn't leave the country, if you were in a band and you didn't leave the country, you didn't survive. So you've got a whole new life and you don't know anyone. I don't know anyone in this fucking country to make a phone call to be like, could you just put me in touch with someone who knows someone who knows someone? Because that's how out of the fucking loop I am. And I got really bummed out. I was like, I really did. Because I was like, I should know at least one person who I could, you know, you're cashing in your rock star card. You're being like, yo, I'm Shim, Sick Puppies, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. We're in the same little club of, we work in the music business, hook a brother up. And in the States, no problem. Here, no fucking chance in hell. And now I'm literally, and the thing is, I can't do anything about it because I can't drive down there and just like knock on the dressing room door or tell security like, hey, Phil from Grinspoon, just tell him Shim's here. Because I knew two of the singers from the bands, I knew well, and one of the defining moments of my life was 20 fucking years ago, the singer from a band called Grinspoon, which is a really big Australian band. No one else would know him in America. But they were a big deal when we were growing up. And I remember playing a couple of shows and meeting the band. And just like, hey, how you doing, whatever. And then I was at a bar in King's Cross, which is like where all the bars are in the city. And I saw and I heard, hey, Shim. And I turn around and it's Phil, the singer from Grinspoon. And he's like, come over here and have a drink with me, man. Come on. And I was like, holy shit. He knows my name. He's inviting me over. Shoot, we hang out and have a drink and talk shit. And I'm like, holy shit moment. And so, but still, that type of relationship is the thing where you should be able to call it in and be like, yo, I want to come to the show, man. If I show up to the show and knock on the door and I'm like, hey, it's Shim from Sick Puppies. Can you tell Phil Shim from Sick Puppies is here? It has been so long that it really most likely would be like, fucking, wait a minute, who? I think.
And then then they Google Sick Puppies and they're like, he's not the lead singer of Sick Puppies. So they get the fuck out.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll be like, this guy's a fucking liar. So now I've driven all the way out to the show to have my dick in my hand, being like that guy. And I'm like, damn. And that was when I got really, I'm like, because I really want to go to the show. And I'm like, I don't know anyone who could. I made like two text messages to two people that were like, you used to be in the scene. Do you know anyone? And they're like, yeah, definitely can't help you, man. Definitely can't help you.
Oh,
I'm
sucks.
Like, bummer. So you've gotten old. I thought that was funny.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I've just been out of the country for too long as well. Like, there's no out of the scene for sure. And
well, then
old.
It sounds like you need to go do a show yourself, my friend.
Yeah, that'll go well.
What?
No one's going to come and see me in Australia, dude. There's a handful of people watching right now who are in Australia and hello and I love you. But in terms of like, the thing that people in America don't realize, the band never connected in Australia. We never toured Australia. People don't know us as an Australian band in Australia. People literally, I went to a party one time with my wife and her friend was there. And so the sister of the friend of my wife is like, oh, Shim's here. This is Shim. He's the guy I was telling you about. He's in a band. And they're like, oh, okay. And I'm like, I really don't want to do this right now because they don't know my band. No one cares. So just chill. And she pulls it up on the phone and she's like, look, it's him. And she plays Maybe. And Maybe's a couple of years old now. And they're like, oh, that was you. Yeah, that song. I remember that song.
But no one
gives a fuck. Yeah, but no one cares. No one's like, no one knew that song was by an Australian band. It was just another song that was popular that year. No one paid attention to, like,
well, because he didn't sing the song. It's not like, maybe I should make a Vegemite sandwich. Like, you didn't put that
exactly.
in the lyrics. If you'd done that,
that's what I should have done.
Known, or said, maybe look out yep. for the drop bays.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing it out.
Now I'm going down a rabbit hole. Yeah. So that's what we should do. Yeah. So after that, I was like, yeah, no, I don't need to leverage anything here. I like coming home and just being chill and not having to deal with any of that stuff.
But then that kind of bit you in the ass because you don't have any connections with the show that you wanted to go to. I'm going to check out Regurgitator.
Exactly.
I'm going to do that.
Dude, Regurgitator, their stuff is amazing. Seriously. They're an amazing live band. Anyway, all right, we'll wrap
this up here for this one. I had a particular thought really quickly before we wrap up this encore, because my thought was originally we did House of Thousand Corpses, and then I was thinking we should go to Rob Zombie. But there's another band that I think we need to cover because mm-hmm. they just made a really big announcement, and there's a lot of buzz around this band.
Right, what is it? For anyone who's listening,
I'm going to do this 182 times.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I heard about this. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's actually a good idea. We should probably do that because there is that buzz going on.
Yeah. And so really quick, Blink-182 for anybody who's listening on Apple or Google, or doesn't have the video of watching me blink. That's what I was doing. I was blinking. Were you a big Blink fan? Are you a big Blink?
I was a big fan of the songs. Yeah, I was a big fan of the songs, and they had a fun vibe. I saw them play once live at the Big Day Out in Australia, and I didn't like the performance. I didn't think it was a great live performance, which bummed me out. But that's my experience with Blink. But yeah, I love the songs
because it's a band that never resonated with me. So this will be one of those episodes where, I mean, I don't hate them. I can respect them for what they've done.
This will be great.
There's some great musicians. It's just it's not anything I would ever listen to. As by choice, I would hear a lot of it.
But the funny thing is, you know the songs. That's a good example of, like, you know, what's my age again? What's my age again? Like,
all
everyone
the
and
small things.
Small things. Yeah, yeah. Simplest fucking songs
my
ever.
My pants. What?
Yeah, they're the fucking simplest songs ever. So that'll be good. We'll do that next week. Sounds good.
Cool, buddy. All right. Well, let's wrap this one up. Say bye, everybody.
All right. Bye, bye. Hey, bye, Shim. Bye, Shim. Bye, Brandon.